A group of local social justice advocates are calling on provincial politicians to take concrete action on the inequity that exists in York Region as Ontario heads toward recovery from the pandemic. This pandemic has really reinforced to us all where the weak points are in our communities, York Region Food Network Executive Director Kate Grivet said. It has also reinforced who in the community is much more vulnerable when a crisis like the pandemic hits. We're stronger when we work together. More than 90 guests joined the Reimagining a Just Recovery online event January 28, with expert panelists reviewing what needs to happen to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. Hosted by Grivet and Social Planning Council of York Region Chair Yvonne Kelly, panelists highlighted the gaps they feel exist in current social policies and systems and provided recommendations for change to candidates and elected officials ahead of the provincial election this June. To live in an adequate and accessible home is a human right, said panelist Alyssa Brierley, executive director and general counsel with the Center for Equality Rights in Accommodation, CERA. According to Brierley, demand for affordable rent is set to increase over the next 30 years, but currently the region is among the worst in the Greater Toronto and Hamilton area for housing affordability, with 50% of rental households in the region paying unaffordable rent. Brierley suggested several solutions to help recover from the decades-long systemic housing issue that worsened during the pandemic. The supply of purpose-built rental housing must increase, she said, so residents will not have to spend more than 30% of their income on housing. Zoning bylaws must allow for densification in communities that have access to public transportation, social services, schools, daycare centers, and employment opportunities, and increase the supply of rent geared to income housing, subsidized housing, to ensure affordable rent remains in perpetuity. Homelessness is a major violation to the right to housing, and ending it must be a priority, Brierley said. Carolyn Ferns, Public Policy and Government Relations Coordinator with the Ontario Coalition for Better Childcare, said the pandemic taught us just how vital childcare is in relation to essential services like hospitals and grocery stores being able to operate. Suddenly, the importance of the issue was being raised by employers, governments and chambers of commerce, and not just childcare advocates, Ferns said. During the first wave of the pandemic, both the municipal and provincial governments were able to mobilize quickly to set up free childcare to essential workers, something unseen since the Second World War, she said. When governments are motivated to act on affordable childcare, it turns out they can do it very quickly. The federal government has promised a $10 a day childcare plan, and Ontario remains the only province yet to sign on for it. Childcare has to be safe, high quality and affordable, which are the objectives of the federal plan, said Ferns. It's something that we can't delay any longer. In consultation with childcare operators, early childhood educators and families, the coalition developed a roadmap that can be used as a guide by municipalities and province to implement a universal childcare system, she said. It's something that I wish that we could see governments coming together and collaborating on rather than throwing up roadblocks. We need governments moving toward a vision where childcare can be affordable for every family that needs it. Deborah Kobluk, senior policy analyst at the Income Security Advocacy Center, said rates for individuals receiving support through Ontario Works or the Ontario Disability Support Program have remained frozen since cuts made in 1995, regardless of the rise of inflation. The situation is untenable, she said. Almost no extra support was given to social assistance clients during the pandemic, said Kobluk, other than a $100 benefit accessed by less than half of clients. Those living in poverty who rely on social assistance were particularly impacted by the pandemic. They could no longer access free or drop-in services, and many working part-time lost their jobs. Kobluk referenced Ontario's plan to modernize the delivery of social assistance, announced in February 2021, and said while it was an opportunity for reform. The concerns outweigh the benefits. Those directly impacted by the pandemic weren't consulted by the province on their approach to modernization, said Kobluk, and the government's plan doesn't include a commitment to raising the rates for clients so they can better afford the rising cost of housing, food or medical supplies. Kobluk called the province's plan to integrate social assistance employment services with Employment Ontario concerning, adding that when it was attempted in the past the outcome was negative. The pay-for-performance employment model will cost the government money, and because the jobs are low-wage or short-term, individuals tend to go on and off social assistance rather than working toward long-term financial stability, she said. People living with a disability have been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic, and the model doesn't attend to their needs, and there is no plan to provide accommodating work for those who are able to work. People on social assistance deserve to live a life with autonomy, health, and basic human dignity. Living in deep poverty, or cycling off low-wage, exploitative and contract employment and failing to address the needs of people with disabilities is not a just recovery. Gillian Pierce, coordinator with the Better Way Alliance, spoke about the importance of decent work in pandemic recovery. The term, decent work, was first used in 1999 by the International Labour Organization to describe employment with a fair income that includes security and social protections for families, equal opportunity and treatment for men and women, and gives employees the freedom to express their concerns and participate in decisions that affect their lives. Raising employment standards is imperative for stability, she said. People who have money to spend tend to do so locally, which benefits economic health. Business owners like her, said Pierce, rely on their employees, and a higher wage increases loyalty. A longtime employee saves business owners money in the hiring and training process. Pierce doesn't think it's accurate for small businesses to say they can't afford to pay higher wages because employers rely on their employees, and if those employees say they can't survive on a $15 per hour wage, then they can't. A growing number of small businesses are trying to raise awareness that paying a living wage is imperative, she said. There's no debate here, and everyone else needs to get on board. A huge gap in policy is the lack of a provincial paid sick day program in Ontario. Because necessary sick day policies weren't in place when the pandemic hit, many people have paid the ultimate price, she said. It's simple, she said. Those who live paycheck to paycheck will not stay home if it means losing pay. Overall, decent work benefits us. It benefits our local economies and, most importantly, the health and well-being of the people in our communities. So we must commit to improving employment standards across the board. As the only member of government in attendance willing to provide feedback on what was discussed, Vaughan Woodbridge MPP and Associate Minister of Mental Health and Addictions Michael Tibolo voiced his appreciation for the panelists' hard work. For too long, the grassroots organizations in this province have gone unrecognized for the heaving lifting that they do. Our premier, Doug Ford, gets it, Tibolo said. He agreed more must be done, but said COVID-19 threw us for a curveball. Tibolo offered future engagement with the panelists so they could collaborate on how to make change. People will never have mental health if they're living off $733 a month, Kobluk said in response to Tibolo. The Reimagining a Just Recovery campaign launched 2 years ago so business and community leaders and not-for-profits share ideas and experiences and find solutions on how York Region can move forward after the pandemic. To support the Reimagining a Just Recovery in York Region effort, join by emailing socialplanningcouncilerr@gmail.com.